Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's New Year's Eve 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, you know, you probably might get a little lightheaded today, so we can't really hold anything you say accountable.
Yeah, a little bit more spacey than even normal. So, you know, stop the recording now and go out and find your friends and tell them to tune in because this is going to be a wild, wacky show. Because, you know, you've called me in from lots of different places, usually some nondescript hotel, casino, hotel rooms, right?
Right.
And one time I was actually looking at the frozen river outside my Chicago hotel room when we're recording this show. And now I'm overlooking a beautiful vista of the Phoenix Basin from our little rented house here on Sunset Mountain. And it's gorgeous, except it's freezing.
Yes.
I can't get away. I can't get away from the cold.
I know.
Where did I go?
It had like a half of an inch of ice on windshields here in the neighborhood this week, so you're not missing anything.
Man, you know, I'm beginning to wonder now whether I'm even going to make it into hell, you know. They're freaking punish me and send me to heaven and freeze up there.
Oh, my God. So what's new with you?
Not much. You know, hanging out here in Phoenix and, you know, heard from a couple of our listeners. I haven't had a chance to catch up with any of them. I don't know whether I will or not because I'm on an official non-working vacation, you know, except for the podcast and 47,000 emails. But other than that, you know, having a good time. And I haven't played any online poker yet while we're out here. Before I came out here, dude, man, I'd be up crushing that game. You know, we're just so busy with the business. I haven't been playing much. And then I'm like, you know, every once in a while, I'll get a minute to play. And the thing is, I don't have time to play multi-tables. I mean, they just take hours, right? I mean, generally for me, they take about 20 minutes. But for most people, they should take hours, right?
Right.
So I can never get into them. But, you know, one night last week, I was done with everything. Wife was coming home late from work. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get in a multi-table. Just a little tiny $4 limit hold'em tournament. And, you know, it was 27 hours later, Chris, I won the thing.
Oh, my God.
It was like 4 in the morning, something ridiculous.
Oh,
you know,
my
I get
God.
Up like at 5, so... but, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was 264 players. I only made $206, you know, take out the $440 I paid, so 202. So I'm not going to be able to retire to Costa Rica on it quite yet. But, you know, I watched myself play this, and I realized that I am maturing as a player, Chris.
Yeah, only as a player, though, not as a human being.
Yeah, I'm growing my poker pubes, and, you know, the thing is that I was just... finally in the zone where I was doing the things that you're supposed to do. I was patient when I needed to be. I was aggressive when I needed to be. I actually paid attention to the other players at the table, their betting patterns. Didn't have any distractions. Didn't have the TV going on and bopping emails back and forth with people and chatting and stuff. And so I was doing everything that we preach on the show, but no one ever does. No one ever does that stuff, except for, you know, the people that are multi-table, 18 tables, and making money. So, you know, we're still not pros, never going to be pros, but this is a big achievement for a little tiny grinder guy like me, I think.
Is this the first time you ever won a tournament online? Like, I mean,
a multi-table tournament online?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
That's awesome.
And we've only been doing this show for, what, 27 years now?
Yeah.
So that's one more feather in our cap here when we go out and promote the show.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad ROI. You know? One tournament every 27 years? That's not too bad. It's actually right up in the acceptable percentage of working professional poker players. You should consider a career change here now, buddy. I think this is a sign from poker gods telling you to consider playing multi-table tournaments all the time.
Oh, I think neither one of us went that. So.
No, I don't think so.
But this is not necessarily a Scott Bragg bit on the show here, but I really was happy that I was able to pay attention and all that stuff, and I think it's a reminder that, you know, when we're online, we're just, you know, relaxed a little bit much, probably too relaxed at times, but you know, if you really bear down and focus on something, you can actually do well at it. And what I was most proud is we finally got on the final table, you know, I was only fifth in chips at that point. Of course, we're in the money already, so, you know, but I was well past that mile marker.
Right.
And I started to watch the other players. You know, some of them, like half of them I had already been playing with, obviously, but the other half I hadn't. And immediately, I realized the guy to the right of me was a complete maniac with all capital letters.
Oh, man, you got him in the perfect spot, too, then.
Perfect spot, and then I'm like, you know what? I am just going to sit back and let this guy kick me like a dog. And I'm not going to get I'm not going to do the dog and pony show like it was, if Faso was in that spot.
Right.
And, you know, a four bet with air every street. I am going to let everybody else get frustrated by this guy, try to take him out, because I know they won't, because you can never take out a guy like that when you try to.
Right.
And I'm going to hope to get heads up. And to be honest, I don't mind it doesn't matter to me how many chips I have heads up against this guy, because I think I know how to play him heads up. And that's exactly what happened. I ended up heads up. He had not a huge chip lead, but he had a decent chip lead. And, boo, your boy brutalized him, Chris.
Yes. A lot of trapping, I'm assuming.
Yeah. He was just, you know, he's just raising all the time, and that's great. And when you get heads up, it's almost the right way to play. But, you know, you can just sit there, and I know every time I raise him, he's going to re-raise me. So he's going to do all the betting for me, and... At that point, you know, you can't push people off hands because it's heads up.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go all the way to the mat with a king high against this guy and take down a big pot. And boom, that's what happened. So, woo.
Well, congratulations. I have two questions. One, was it easier to avoid the distractions and to pay attention being a limit tournament? Was it easier on you?
You know, that's a good question. Normally... that's why I kind of play the limit ones, because and avoid stud and stuff when I'm watching TV and all that stuff, because you don't really have to pay attention as much.
Right.
I mean, no limit. You have to know whether that bet size is going to get somebody off. So I don't know if it was easier. I just, you know, it really convinced me that I've got to find a way to just turn the TV off and just focus on the computer screen and play one table. Now, the very next day, then I started going on this run of sit and goes where I've been doing very well at them too, but I got into one right before I got on the airplane, and I was in my office where I don't have the TV at home,
right.
And I was just playing the one table, and oh my God, I was counting the sheep and stuff. I was doing, you know, give me a Red Bull. I got to stay awake. This is so boring. So I don't know whether I really had the discipline to continue doing it. But for that one shining moment in time, it all came together for me.
Now, the other thing I wanted to know is, can somebody really be, you know, categorized as a maniac in a limit tournament?
Oh, absolutely. You can be a maniac in anything. We can see that name with all these people with cities with characters that we can't recognize.
You know, maybe he's got a little, you know, I don't know, a heightened ADD or something, you know, and he's got to, you know, raise a lot to keep focus or something. But a maniac, really? I don't know. The limit tournament.
Well,
oh,
yeah.
It's crazy. He made it one more bet. What a maniac.
it's all relative, my good friend, you know. So, you know, when those blinds get big and you're four betting all the way to the end and you got nothing, and then you got some play like me who's been playing limits since I was in freaking diapers, I know I'm going to call on the river with anything. And then I know there's a lot of those, how could you call things going on, though the guys, you know, can't type that in the chat because, you know, it's English only. But I think that's what happened. You know, in No Limit, these guys are just used to all in. And then people are like, all right, I fold.
Yeah.
And you can't do that in Limit. So, I mean, yeah, you could be a maniac. It's just that you last a little longer being a maniac.
Well, I got to tell you, somebody who was a maniac the other day was me at my front door. It was December 27th, and a DHL guy comes to my front door and rings the bell.
DHL? Doesn't even exist anymore.
I know. And that's the thing, too, is you know it wasn't domestic because they basically, pulled up anchor and left the domestic market when FedEx just said, okay, you are the weakest link. Goodbye. So when this guy shows up at my door, I'm like, what the hell's going on here? I said, do I have any, like, distant relatives who missed Christmas and are sending me something from Europe? I mean, what the hell is this?
You got that Nigeria money I've been
trying. That's what it was, exactly. We can finally quit the business and retire, man.
I've sent a $250 check for months and I haven't got anything.
Turns out you can retire to Costa Rica. I just been waiting to tell you. So I'm like, ding dong, who's this? The guy's like at the door and I said, I wonder what this. I said, people really like miss it. Does somebody really miss Christmas to send something to us? Or, you know, are they getting that desperate to get junk mail into my mailbox that they're sending it via DHL? I mean, what the hell is this? So the guy's like, yeah, Mr. Cosenza? And I said, yeah. He said, this is for you. I said, oh, man, what the hell could this be? So I look at it, and it's from Singapore. I'm like, I don't know about you, but I've never visited the Orient, and I don't know anybody from Singapore. I'm like, what the hell?
I don't think they call it the Orient anymore.
I know, but I just was...
Oriental listeners.
I was doing a little old school throwback there.
All right.
And I wasn't calling somebody that. I was saying that, referring to a place. I don't think I could offend anyone with that, but we'll find out, I guess. So I'm like, what the hell could this be? So my wife's there, and I'm like, hun, do we know anybody in Singapore or any businesses? And the guy says, I think it's poker winnings.
Excellent.
I said, whoa. Oh, yeah. I had forgotten that on the 22nd, I cashed out a rather large sum out of PokerStars, and I was not expecting it. 5 days later, over Christmas weekend, I got it in 5 days, my cash out. Usually the cash outs take forever, and over Christmas weekend? I couldn't believe it.
It's DHL. They don't celebrate Christmas, so.
And they don't have anything else to do, really. PokerStars is probably their only client. I just couldn't believe the check got cut. You know what I mean? It was Christmas weekend, all the deliveries at all is being done by DHL and whatever it is, and I couldn't believe it. 5 days I got my check. I was like, wow, I'm depositing it today.
Alright, well, let me go how that deposit goes, because I was getting ready to celebrate the fact that you were the first person I've heard of who's actually successfully cashed out. I'm sure it happens all the time. But, you know, we're all worried about the, you know, UIGA, and, you know, they're all getting up in our face about it now. And you're the first one actually that I know that has money online to take off. and then actually got a check. So now we'll see. You know, the next step is whether your big bad bank will actually cash that check. But does it look like anything that would obviously this guy knows his poker winning. So if he knows, I'm worried that the banker will know.
That is a question I wonder too. How does this guy know? I mean, maybe on his thing it says it's from PokerStars, but not on the actual envelope or check. I don't know. But I mean, how did this guy know it was poker winnings? I mean. But yeah, I'll let you know. And I actually, well, it's funny that you say that. I actually have the little slip that it comes with, and it says beneficiary Christopher Cosenza, send to Christopher Cosenza, issued on Christmas Eve. The amount of money, the reference number, check number, and check is spelled C H E Q U E.
Oh, excellent!
And it said ordered by Landcore Merchant Services PTE Limited, 1 Fullerton Road, Singapore. Fullerton Road. That doesn't sound like a legitimate address in Singapore, does it? I don't know.
Oh,
but,
that's great.
Anyway, yeah, so I got it, and I'm going to deposit it today, and I'll let you know if I get any flack from it, but I doubt I will. But it did shock me that the guy knew what it was. It's like, hey, dude, how did you know? That's kind of bizarre.
Well, again, we're just hoping that that's the only thing that guy delivers now. He's probably just happy to have business, so.
It's true.
That's what I'm hoping for. But, you know, here's the thing, Chris. If you get to the bank and they're like, sorry, Mr. Costanza, we can't cash this. It smells like poker winnings. I want you to play the first clip and our feedback this week. And I guarantee you they will melt behind the little desk there and say, yes, sir, and give you whatever you want.
All right, let's listen.
Hey, Chris, this is Andy Up King. I was just calling to comment how much I loved your article on the Reed Bill. Great article. I've got a whole new respect for your writing ability now, and I appreciate the article. I think it's absolutely the best thing that happened to poker, that that bill did not go through. Keep the good writing coming.
Oh, man. You know, Annie F. King.
Get a room.
Flattery will get you everywhere. Give this man some swag. I don't care if he's gotten swag before. You're going to send him something, man.
Yeah, we'll send it by DHL.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate the, you know, I think it's because it was weighing on my brain so much that I thought a lot about it. And so whenever you think a lot about something, you feel like you're pretty well versed in it. So you want to put it down on paper. And I was just fortunate that I had you as an editor behind me looking at it, making sure I didn't completely make me a fool. But thanks, Andy Up King. I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, and we didn't put this on the show this week to make Chris's head any bigger than it already is. I also think, I mean, it was a good take on this. I mean, we went back and forth on the show because we did the show right away after this came out, and
right.
We hadn't really thought about our ideas, and then kind of threw them back in later on. But, I mean, when you think about it, when you actually sit down and write and really have to think about it like you did there, I mean, you see that it may not be something that we necessarily want.
No, I know. And if you want to read it, I think I've put it online already. But if not, it's in our latest issue. And also
yeah, it's actually on our homepage right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I put it as a commentary. So, yeah, if you want to read it, take a good look at it there and let us know what you think.
All right. Well, NF King is called almost as often as Zorag, who was, sorry, Zorag, you're never going to get on the show again. So you can just quit calling the hotline. But this next guy has not won any swag. So let's listen to what Sean from Oregon has to say.
Hey, guys. This is Sean from Portland, Oregon. I love the podcast. I was just listening to the most recent podcast, and you were talking about the PCA coverage on ESPN 2 and 3. One thing you guys forgot to mention that's pretty important is that they're going to be showing the whole cards. That's the whole reason they have the one-hour delay, so they can show the whole cards. I think that'll add a lot more interest. It's true that the casual viewer might still have trouble sitting through the long wait times, but at least we'll be able to see the whole cards. And for the more serious viewers, that's a real improvement, and hopefully it will set the standard for future live broadcasts. Anyways, keep up the great work. And I just wanted to let you know that you kind of missed that. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just assumed that we were going to see the whole cards, but maybe assuming makes an ass out of you and me, so I mean, I shouldn't do that anymore. But
often it does. Often it does.
But I did. I thought that he's right. It's a good point. Yeah, we are going to get to see the whole cards, and I think that ESPN had done that before, I guess, with the World Series too, when it was on that delay or whatever. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but weren't they sequestered when they did that? Didn't they have them, like, you know, locked in a little NASA space chamber and
yeah.
They couldn't come out and talk to anyone?
Don't
and,
open you know. The hatch, we'll explode.
Well, you know, I wonder about that here because I don't think they had those NASA space chambers in the Bahamas. So, you know, obviously the fear of showing whole cards in the middle of a tournament that's going on is that, you know, you got somebody, you know, watching on his iPhone. And at the break, he comes out, you go in and take a piss, and he's like, oh, yeah, that guy had pocket queens when you re-raised him.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It changes the complexity of the tournament. So I assume they probably have some safeguards in there, but that's going to be the next frontier if somebody decides, you know, hey, we're not worried about these safeguards. We're just going to put it out there because it's entertainment. And, you know, if somebody's smart enough to game the system, then I guess that's just the way it goes.
Yeah,
I think that's the bigger issue.
That's the other thing, too, is you could be literally anywhere and watch this and just text the your friend, you know, oh my god, my friend's at the final table, I'm going to watch it an hour delay, and I'm going to text him saying, hey, the hand where you had this, he had that, you know, and you could benefit from that, you know, so okay, that's how he's playing me, you know, even if it's an hour later is nothing, really, if you think about it. I mean, an hour in a final table, some final tables go 13,
yeah.
14 hours, so.
Probably 15 hands at
yeah.
most, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess it raises, I mean, you could be sabotaged now, right? Double
yeah.
agents.
That's true.
When you're at the final table, I mean, maybe one of your opponents outbids you for me. And I'll be like, dude, Chris, man, you got to play more aggressive. That guy's brutalized. And you'll be like, oh, thanks, buddy.
Every time he raises 2.5 times, he's bluffing.
Yeah, you'll go in there, you'll get slaughtered like a lamb, and the DHL guy will show up at my doorstep the next day.
All right, well, what does Sean win, since he's the only one who's qualifying for swag this week?
Yeah, and this qualifies this week as our hotline, so remember, folks, call 813-448-1120. We got a lot of hotline clubs lined up, so, you know, make it a good one to move up in the queue here.
I think the thin air is starting to get to your pronunciation.
Yeah. Well, you know, my pronunciation was never good to begin with, so. All right, well, Sean, we are going to send you a deck of those great J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Annie Up. And, Chris, you know, Jason Holley, the great founder of that company, he sent us a little Christmas gift this week, his new Victorian design cards.
Oh, my God.
Which we've seen online, but we actually haven't touched them, feeled them, and played with them in a home game yet. But he sent us a setup of those, so we'll get playing. Break those out for the next Annie Up home game. And folks, go to ClassicPlayingCards.com and check out those Victorian cards. Really special.
Did you say field?
Field, yes. So yes, that's how they say it here in Phoenix. I'm speaking cowboy now.
Hey there, partner. Don't make me field you. I field your presence. All right, well, Apes is coming up pretty soon. Not right away, but at least I won't be on a cruise for the actual event. I will be on a cruise for the free roll. The next event is Wednesday, January 12th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. No Limit Hold'em, or as Scott likes to call it, CNLHE. And you can try to get into that for free by playing in our free roll on Wednesday, January 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. All the details are on AnnieUpMagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S.
Excellent. And also remember, our cruise bookings are still open, AnnieUpMagazine.com/cruise. You got to book by January 6th to lock in that $649 rate for our next cruise, the March 7th cruise out of Fort Lauderdale. After that, bookings are on whatever the prevailing rates are at that time. So, you know, get in early to get the best rate.
And we got a couple of people talking to us about their vision for a Rounders sequel. So we want to remind everybody, if you want to send us what you think Rounders 2 will center on, you know, give us your little, what do you call it, your treatment, right, Scott?
Yeah, treatment.
Send us your treatment. Tell us what you think the sequel is going to be like. And if we get enough of them, Scott and I will chime in. Maybe we'll do a whole show dedicated to Rounders 2. So don't forget, send it to podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And maybe we'll get you on the show.
Yeah, we got a fantastic one from Father Paul this morning that had to be rolling. So definitely got to get that on the show. And, Chris, I've gotten mine written in my head as well, too. So, you know, as long as I don't, you know, suffocate from the thin air up here, I'm going to get it down on paper. And I think it's a winner. So
All right.
Looking forward to that show. And it's going to be a lot more fun if we get a few more people to send us their treatments.
Well, because you're at any moment could pass out on me, we're just going to have one item from the news desk today, right? So tell me what it is.
All right. The 2011 World Series of Poker will be played May 31st to July 19th, again at the Rio in Las Vegas. And the final nine players will return in November to finish off the main event. The actual schedule will be released sometime in January. And one big change this year, Chris, all tournaments will play 10 levels before ending for the night this year. So 10 levels, boom, wherever they are, but backing up the chips, you're out. None of this stuff where you don't really know how long they're going to go at night.
All right, so let me ask you this. 10 levels, I thought when you're in the World Series, your levels are like 2 hours. They ain't playing 20 hours. So what are the levels? 1 hour levels?
That is a good question.
Maybe they're
you know, maybe they'll stop it. Maybe they won't play. 10 is the maximum. Maybe that's what it is.
Okay, that's 20 hours. That's a whole day.
So, I mean, but what I'm saying is, 10 levels will be the maximum. Maybe they'll only play like 8 of the main event when it's 2 hours or something.
Okay.
Or
right.
Six.
Six.
I don't know.
Five.
But I think the bigger deal is last year they had some that went, you know, 12 or more levels, and you know, the old guys like us were like, hey, I gotta take my pills.
And turn off that damn air.
Yeah.
Give me a sweater, damn it.
So this year, you know, they're more age-centric
for us young at heart folks.
It also squashes the rumor about that it was supposed to be at Caesars this year.
That's right. That's right.
Which, thank God, it's not, because the parking there is horrendous. I don't know how that was going to work out, but you know, I know that
people don't know how to park at the Bellagio like you and I do, and then I make you drag you across the street in our jeans in 112 degrees.
Yeah, that was terrific. I still have like atrophy in my legs from that trip. I mean, people were saying that the Rio is up for sale. It's not doing well. It's off the strip too far away, and they want to get rid of the property, and that's why the World Series is moving. But boom, it's there again, and that's a good, you know, 6 months away. So, hey, we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, the mailbag comes from Ryan Van Vels this week, and it's for you, Scott. He says he thinks you're the one who came up with the wife tax, which you were. So he wants you to explain the wife tax again. Because his wife doesn't like him playing cards, but she's not against him playing, so he'd like to reward the wifey. So what was your arrangement?
I like people that look out for the wives, you know, because everything starts at home with the wives. If the wife is happy, the guys can go out and do whatever they want, for the most part. So, you know, the wife tax, it started long ago. I same thing, my wife did not... dissuade me from playing, but I felt like I should reward her a little bit. Maybe she'd let me play a little longer. So I cut her in on 10% of my winnings.
Very nice.
Come home from the track and I won $100 that day. Boom, 10 spot on the desk waiting for. Now, of course, you know, in a mathematical sense, this is a terrible, terrible thing. Because I didn't subtract my expenses. You know, she didn't give me $20 when I lost $200. So in the end, it was a terrible, terrible financial thing, but I got to play a lot more poker, because of it, so. and then the best thing is you quit your job and start a company, and then she's like, honey, you don't need to do the wife tax anymore. Yes!
Now I can lose freely without having
to... Score!
Of course, now I'm not playing as much.
But you know, the wife tax is a good way of doing it, because then, you know, then she gets excited about your winnings,
right? Right.
And if you don't do it the mathematical way, which would be the way that's most beneficial for you, then you're showing her a lot more winnings.
Yeah.
But all right, well, Ryan, we're gonna get you started here. Even if you don't do the wife tax on making the wife happy, we're gonna send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerware.com. And this is a true test for you, Ryan, because when I've tried to do this before to very smart men trying to make their very, very smart wives happy, they go, "Yeah, send me a men's XL." They don't pick up on the subtle hint of, hey, you're asking about your wife. This company has great shirts for gals. How about you give your swag to her? That's kind of the idea here. So we're going to test you here, Ryan. So, you know, if you ask for a men's shirt, boom, you're done. No chance.
Any suggestions for a shirt logo this week?
Let's see. I am playing for the wife tax.
I'm playing for the wife tax.
Or no, my wife gets 10% of my winnings, so go easy on me.
Oh man, that is great.
I'm working on something else too, but that's probably a little too blue for the show. So I'll refine it here and come up with something else.
Oh man, okay, let's ride along a little further with Columbo. We're getting toward the end, Scott. I can feel it. It's the 8,000, 16,000, 2,000 level. We're the big stack at the table, and the under-the-gun player makes it 48,000 to go. Folds around to us on the baton with ace of spades, queen of clubs. Do we raise or no?
No.
No, we don't raise.
That's it. I'm gone. No.
Okay.
Ace queen is always a danger Will Robinson hand to me. And to be honest, I think it should be a danger Will Robinson hand to a lot of people. Especially when we get this under the gun raiser. Now, I know we get vilified week in and week out on this show. We're getting scared of the monsters on the bed and the closet and the monsters that gave us this Justin Bieber creature. But I don't want to reopen the betting to someone who very well may have ace, ace, king, king, or ace, king here. We have the biggest stack. We have the best position. Everything is going our rainbows and frogs are hopping around. You know, I'm just happy calling here, and we'll see how the hand develops, and, you know, we'll see how the hand develops. But, you know, if I call here, it's standard raise, I get a big stack, no big deal.
Do you think enough of our listeners will understand that Danger Will Robinson reference?
Not at all. That's why I did the Justin Bieber.
Or do you think enough of them saw that hideous sequel by Matthew LeBlanc?
Oh, yes! Oh, my gosh! I think only three people saw that. Matt, his mom, and his agent.
All right, well, I'm in cahoots with you today.
Jimmy Rogers was in that, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, an old skin-tight thing. So then
you must have seen it.
So yeah, yeah.
You're understanding your own reference. Okay, well, like I said, I'm in cahoots with you. I agree. I think we should just call, given that it was an under-the-gun raise. I think that if it was a little bit later, I would have re-raised. But given that it's an under-the-gun raise, pretty steep blind levels here, pretty big raise there. I mean, we don't know chip stacks, but we know we're the big stack. So, you know, if we're in the hand and they show a little weakness, maybe it's because they think that we're, you know, we can bust them. But really, I don't want to go broke with a queen in my hand, and especially if the under-the-gun has ace-king. That's the last thing I want. I'm calling here. I'm not folding, and I'm not raising. I think there's actually an argument for folding, which I think you could make better than I could, since I've seen you do it, you know, sweating your cards at Derby Lane. But, yeah, no, I do think that a call is in order here. And I believe our forum was unanimous in calling as well. But one said, you know, if we raise, it needs to be a shove. And then another one said, depending on chip stacks, a fold isn't out of the question. So I just said that too. So that makes sense. I mean, I don't think a fold is out of the question, but I'm going to call and just see what the flop brings. And if it's coordinated, I might get out of the way.
Because I think one of the questions is if you're going to, and I know people are sitting at home going, oh my gosh, you got to call. What are you going to do when that? What are you kind of flop are you looking for? Which you need to think about.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this situation, we have a big stack. We have the big position. I don't really need to spend a lot of time thinking about what the flop might be. Well, you know, we'll see how it plays out. You know, obviously, we'd want to flop four queens, you know. That would be pretty good.
Because that happens, like, twice a day.
Yeah, you know, you never know. I mean, this could be an online tournament, right? So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it happens, you know, twice an hour online. So, but there might be some other flops that are nice. And a lot of it, I'm just kind of waiting to see what this under-the-gun guy does. You know, presumably he's going to make a C bet on most boards, and but if it's a safe board he doesn't, then that's, you know, fishy.
Yeah.
And then I'll think about trying to do something different there. So, but you know, we're the big stack, so it's not that I like to just flush 48 grand down the toilet, but we have 48 grand we can flush down the toilet, so why not?
Yeah, and we're already in for 16, so you know,
we're on the button.
Oh, we're on the button. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were on the
button. Yeah, we're already in for two.
Well, then the good news is that we're in position, too. blinds come before the button? All right, forget it. Never mind. I don't want to open up that can of worms again. All right, let's see what happens.
Welcome back. Well, what'd you want to do with ace-queen on the button facing an early position raiser? Certainly can't blame you if you raised here, but I like calling as the big stack, and I have a threatening position after the flop. The flop comes jack of clubs, ten of hearts, queen of spades, and our big blind, who, by the way, called, checks here, and our original under-the-gun raiser, who bet the 48K pre-flop, now bets 56K post-flop.
Sir, could I have a moment of your time? There are some things I'm trying to clear up here.
Just to make it clear, we're down to two tables in the tournament, and we're playing this one shorthanded. Four more to the final table. What do you want to do?
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem five Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that five of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, Chris, you know, I spend about 4 days a year at home.
Yeah, I know. What the hell, dude?
I really don't like my home. It's scary.
By the way, the other day I was driving by the road that goes to your house, and I knew you weren't home, and I thought, break in? And then I said, hey, Jean, you want to go to Scott's house and steal some stuff? She goes, does he have anything that's valuable? And I said, good point. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah, you know, I get that all the time because I'm not one of these Facebook freaks that checks in places. But obviously I do post when I'm on vacation. And then, you know, my wife everyone's like, hey, should we do that? Someone's going to break in. And I'm like, break in.
Scott's got these great pair of 3D sunglasses that you can take. Well, other than that, really, there's nothing in the house that you want, so don't worry about it.
I mean, you know, the chairman of Walmart could break into my house and go, man, I can't sell any of this stuff.
I think I'll steal the pig flying painting that's on the entrance.
Yeah,
when you first
exactly.
walk in.
Exactly.
That's my favorite piece right there.
All right, well, before I got on a plane out here to Phoenix, I went down to South Florida recently. We had the finals of the Florida Million, that great unique tournament we have down here. And then I also got to tour our Antioch Poker Cruise ship, which was cool. And I just want to warn all our listeners that are probably reaching for the fast-forward button now, thinking that, oh, my God, they're going back on another one of the Florida-centric show. I'm not going to care a stitch about anything they're saying. Stop! Because the show is not about these events. It's about things that happen in these events that could happen to people anywhere.
You know, you could have just not told him it was the Florida Million, and you could have just said, I went to a tournament recently, and yeah. Then that was it.
Well played.
But you had to say Florida-centric. I think you wanted to work that into the lexicon of the public listening. So
we'll work that into a T-shirt, too.
Yeah. It's Florida-centric.
But, you know, this the main topic is kind of like the boxing movie that's not about boxing.
Yes.
All right, well, let's start about this Florida Million, and I'm not going to waste a lot of time talking about it, but it's a unique format. You know, players can play their day ones in any of the seven participating rooms to finish in the top 10%. They bag the chips up, and then you come back to the championship location, and you pick up with your chip stack on day two there. And, you know, really kind of a cool way of building a prize pool for a tournament.
Yeah.
Because you have multiple day ones in multiple cities, and each room has multiple day ones. So, I mean, it's not like just one and done there. You got four or five in. So, you know, last year they obliterated the $1 million prize pool and had more. This year they fell a little short, so I'm calling it the Florida 800,000 this year. But still, you know, pretty nice payday. You know, first place would have taken home $200,000.
Yeah.
That's a lot more zeros than I took home in my $4.40 limit hold'em online tournament. That is now the crowning achievement of my Hendon Mom page. And with that kind of money out there, you know that there's going to be a CHOP discussion at some point. And I find this stuff absolutely fascinating at these tournaments because you were with me last year, the finale was at Derby Lane, so we just had to get in the car and drive 10 minutes.
Right.
They had a crazy CHOP discussion that year, remember?
Yep. It actually started with 18 players left. They started the CHOP discussion.
Right. And then when they finally got down to the point where it was going to happen, my favorite memory of that was all these like little CPA guys around the outer rail with their calculators on their iPhones trying to figure things out and telling their buddies what it is. It was hilarious. It really was. I mean, you could tape it, put it on TV, and people were like, I'm not watching Abbott Costello anymore. This stuff is pure gold.
It was. And as you're about to say, too, people were starting to fight. You know what I mean? They were like, you know, accusing each other of crap and calling each other names. And I'm like, dude, you guys are going to make five figures today. Relax. Good God. You know? Give me a break.
Oh, man. But, you know, it's the relax advice that you're giving them that I think played into what I saw at this year's CHOP discussion, which was even more contentious than the one you saw.
Really?
There were a lot of F-bombs, you know, a lot more F-bombs than are in my house when my wife and I are talking to each other. And it was pretty nasty. I was actually hanging out on the side. I wasn't watching it because you know, the Packers were blowing a game again, so I was watching that game. But I was listening out of one ear, and I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is hilarious. But what I'm bringing up here is I think somebody was a little weak and just said, you know what, like you said, Chris, hey, I'm making a lot of money already. Yes, I'll just agree to this, and then had buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
And what was really funny about that was the way they did it this year. So what they did at the time is they finally, when they got down to 10-handed, it was finally when they were able to get a good shop discussion going. And very quickly into it, they decided to do what they called a chip equity chop.
Right.
So at that point, they're like, you know what? Hey, we're going to take 50 grand off of the remaining prize pool, and we're going to play this thing out so we have an actual champion and there's something worth playing for, right?
Right.
And then the rest of it, we are going to separate payout proportionally based on the chip stacks that we have right now.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
That sounds pretty cool. Yeah. You know, they worked so hard, you know, 4 or 5 days of play or whatever it was at this point, and, you know, they're all had significant money at this point, so let's just chip equity it out, right?
Right.
So, so they start talking, and then at some point during this discussion, Chris, someone said, hey, three guys are essentially the same in chips, so let's all give them the same amount of money. All right, now on the surface, that sounds, oh, yeah, sure, cool. But kids, we're not playing the Atari at home when we're 4 years old now. It's a chip equity. You know, I don't know, Chris, but, you know, I don't have the fancy cool iPhone that you have. I just have this, you know, run-of-the-mill Smithsonian-issued BlackBerry.
Right.
But even that has a calculator on it. When you're doing a chip equity, there shouldn't be any discussion at all. If we say, all right, we all agree to chip equity, you boop, 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 bing, exactly. It tells you how much you're going to get, right?
It takes a while, but yeah, you got to be precise with it. You don't just look at somebody's stack and go, oh, yeah, they're about the same. Let's give them both the same amount of money. You can't do that.
Oh, my God. It was insanity. I was sitting back. I'm like, is this really going on? Now, you know, I don't want to put any words in anybody's mouth, but I think what was going on was someone trying to take advantage of someone else. All right, that's the only way I can think about it. But so of those three people that had about the same amount, one of them had more chips than the other two.
Yeah.
All right, not a lot, because it was about the same amount, but he had a lot. In the end, he ended up losing about $1,500.
Man.
In this job. Now, when you're talking about the money they're talking here, $1,500 is not that big a deal. But you know what? I just bought a TV, Chris.
Yeah.
Not encouraging anybody to steal it from a house, but it was less than $1,500, and that was a major purchase for me.
Yeah.
So $1,500 is not anything to sneeze about.
No, there's no way that especially at the level that we're talking here. I mean, some of these guys are, as we'll find out, are pretty used to making big money like this, but most of them aren't. $1,500, man. If you played in a tournament and cashed and made $1,500, you'd be ecstatic. Now you're just throwing it away because you're going to make 60 or 70? That's just not right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Crazy.
I
think it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right, but anyhow, they did the standard thing where they went around and made sure everybody agreed to it. And so I guess that's the point of my story, Chris. You're allowed to say no, folks.
Okay, Nancy.
I mean, when they come around to you and like, oh, are you willing to give away $1,500 because you're a moron? You're allowed to say no.
Just say no to bad chops.
So this guy said, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, all, you know, puffing his feathers out and stomping around. All he had to say was no.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how hard this would have been to say, hey, we're doing a chip equity. We have the technology these days. We don't have to take our shoes off and count on our toes.
We have the technology. We can rebuild him.
Let's just do it fairly, right? I mean, what's the big deal?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but this guy said yes for whatever reason and then continued to whine about it for the rest of the tournament. Now, I don't blame him for whining, but I do blame him for saying yes.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, he's obviously bright enough to make it this far in a tournament. He should be bright enough to recognize a bad chop when he hears it. So, you know, he made his own bed, now he's got to lie in it. Sorry for the pun.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think that chop was going to collapse with him saying no. I think he would have said, hey, can't we just do it exact?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's crazy.
But, all right, well, here's the other part of the chop discussion I thought was interesting. At the end, and we'll talk about the winner here in a little bit, but he was clearly the most accomplished player at the table. 3 circuit rings. Really well-known, very good player. He's second in chips. Chris, I ask you, is it advantageous for him to make a deal? When you are the best player at the table, probably by far, second in chips, do you make a deal?
All right, so first place paid, what, 200 grand?
200 grand. And second place chopped, was 100 grand, and then it went down.
And if you chopped, and the chopped, pilot was going to make about 95 anyway, right?
Well, no, he chopped. He got about 73 grand out of the chop. And then, of course, he had the 50 grand left to play for. So, you know, if he ended up winning, which he did, it would be another 25 grand. But at that time,
right,
he was chopping essentially for a guaranteed 73 grand.
You know, I don't know.
He'd have to finish the top three to get more.
I don't know. You know, because I'm never the best player remaining of any tournament, so I don't know what that feels like. but I think that there is a lot to be said about variance and the variety of players at that final table. Even though you're the most accomplished player, obviously the most experienced, probably the best player at the table, I think that, you know, if you can wrap up some pretty damn good money for a $500 buy-in, and then just, you know, play for the title and play for the extra 50 grand at the end, or 25 grand, whatever it would be, that's not a bad day either, you know, because he could end up finishing second for 100 grand anyway. This way, he's probably going to make 100 grand guaranteed based on how good he is. You know, I mean, I realize he could be throwing away an extra 100 grand here, but he could also be looking at making 30 grand, you know, or whatever. So, I don't know. I don't think it's a bad deal. It's tough, though. It's tough because I've never been in that position. I really don't think if I got to that position where I knew everybody was a fish and I was that good that I would – you know, I mean, he's playing – I do know some of the players at this final table. He is playing against some quality players there. One of them is like the Palm Beach Player of the Year this year, and that guy is a good player. And I think that I ultimately wouldn't make the deal.
Okay, I mean, obviously, we've never been in the situation, so, I mean, my guess, though, is I think this guy makes the deals all the time because as a matter of ongoing business sense, it makes sense.
Right.
But I do have to wonder whether you lose a little money at the table, whether at that point, I mean, you've already locked up a pretty good payday, even if you finish ninth. If something drastic happens and you get into a ace-ace versus king-king versus a chip leader, boom, you're out. To me, I think if I had that kind of skill and that kind of chip stack, I don't think I would necessarily want to chop at that point and give away, in essence, the possibility of another 130,000.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you saying to play it out or just to eliminate some more players until you see who you're up against and see where you stand, say, an hour from now?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would always, you know, somebody said, all right, now we just lost another one. Let's talk chop again. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, every player we lose is not gonna, we're not going to lose a better player than me.
Right.
And, you know, I guess at some point I guess what would change in my mind is if I did have one of those bad beats or something where my chip stack changed dramatically. But you know, the best person at the table with the second biggest chip stack, that's somebody to worry about, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I just, you know, I don't know, maybe there's something to be said about wrapping up, you know, a nice chunk and then playing for the rest, playing for the title, karma, all kinds of stuff come into play. You know, and he's from that area, and that's one of the rooms that he plays a lot in, and I'm sure that a lot of those players – and that's the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is we're noticing a trend here, how much better you fare in these things when it's in your backyard, because Derby Lane in St. Petersburg had, like five or six guys at the final table the last time around, and the two guys who finished there were the two that played there, and the guy who won it plays there. Same thing here. It was like five players or something like that, right, at the final table that were from the Palm Beach area. And, of course, right, the winner and the guy who finished second or whatever were from Palm Beach. They got to go home and sleep in their beds and just make a short drive over. And so there's something to be said for that. But I don't know. I just think maybe it's just I love to just make money when I play poker. And if I'm going to make that kind of cash, I don't mind settling. He's totally different. You know, he plays for a living and he's very successful. Right. So, yeah, I think – you know, maybe if I'm him, maybe I do postpone the chop a little bit. But he was pretty much pro-chop, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, and far be for me to criticize somebody that does this all the time and is very successful. I just, from my point of view, where I sat, and I asked him about this at the end of it, and he clearly said, you know, hey, it's a business decision. You know, I'm going to lock in what I have. And at the end of the day, I'm winning it, so he took home $100,000 or a little less. So.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a bad day at the pay at the office, but, you know, I really do think had he played it out, you know, he could have walked away with 200 grand.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference. You know, that's 10 years of the World Series main event right there.
Yeah, yeah.
That you left on the table.
Yeah.
Completely different if you're somebody like you and me, Chris.
Yes.
With no business ever being there. And that's exactly what happened also at this. They eventually did this 10-player chop, like I said, right? And they played it down. And at that point, you know, when these people have locked in the profit, it moves a lot quicker, which as a journalist is awesome.
Yes.
Because I want to get back to my hotel that night.
Yes.
And the chip leader actually got knocked out pretty quickly. You know, he was like, ooh, I'm happy with my money. Boom, gone. So they get down to three-handed, and the eventual champion, this very good player that we talked about, another player, probably not on his level, but is a very good, solid local player. And then, Chris, a third guy who is in his second tournament ever.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
All right, and when he was low on ships 10-handed, I think he was probably in seventh place, maybe.
Uh-huh.
So obviously, enthusiastically, he agreed to the chop. You know, hey, I'm going to lock in this money right now. That's three places better than I probably should be. I'll take that money, and then I'll just, you know, wing it. They're trying to win some of this extra money. But when they got down to three-handed, they started a chop discussion again about the final 50 grand, right?
Right.
But he was guaranteed at least another 10 grand at that point, by the way they were doing the three-way payout. And he was the short stack by a large margin, and he resisted another chop. He wanted to play it out. So my question for you on this one is, did this guy let pride get in the way of a bigger payday? I mean, obviously, he was not skilled. He was. This is the exact opposite of what we were just talking about. The least skilled person with the smallest stack, should he not have just cut a deal, taken more money, and gone home and paid the wife tax?
Well, I know it's not pride, mainly because I read the quotes that you got from him.
Right.
In the story, and this guy was just happy to be there, made a ton of money, and he thought, you know what, I could win this thing. How much fun would that be to win? And I'm here just to play, and I can't believe I'm getting this experience. And you know, I have the right to play in this tournament the way I want to play. And if I win the money, I don't, whatever, you know. But I get to, you know, go up against these great players. And what would it be if I were to win? You know, they've got all the pressure on them. I'm not even supposed to be here. This is just fun for me, and I made plenty of money. It's not about the money now, so why not just try to win and prove that you are a pretty decent player, and not even prove it, but just, you know, to see how good you really are and whether or not you should continue to play poker like this. And I don't think it was pride. I think it was more of an entertainment value for this guy. He's already wrapped up a ton of cash, so why not just play it out? I agree with that. I think that if I'm playing for bonus money, why chop it again? You know what I mean? I'm happy with what I chopped already. So now this is just bonus. So let's play it out. Maybe I'll win the trophy and get my face on my, you know, inside the magazine or something. So I don't know. I don't think it was pride. I think it was more of just entertainment.
Yeah, I think I kind of call this the deal or no deal phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, you're on a game show. You've already won. You know, you've locked in more money than you ever thought you would win. So at this point, you know, the rationality of, oh man, I'm just gambling with $100,000 or whatever it is at that point. Where if you just started with nothing and someone said, hey, do you want to flip a coin for $100,000? You'd be like, oh my gosh, no way. But when you already have like $100,000, then you're much more willing to gamble with the other $100,000 and just throw out that whole thing. And I think that's what this guy was doing. And, you know, I guess the other thing, too, and you kind of mentioned this, too. I mean, it's just exciting to be there. So if you're there and you're that kind of player, obviously you're hoping that you'll make it there again someday. But you went through a considerable amount of odds to get that far as it is.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to get that shot again? This might be your one time to be in a big tournament and actually win it. So, you know, maybe an extra 10 grand or something is not that big a deal at that point.
And even so, really, if you think about it, it was 50,000 left over. You're guaranteed 10. Divide 50 by 3, it's only 12. You're only going to get another 2 grand anyway if you chop it equally. So what's the difference, right? Because 48 is, you know, 36. So what is it, 3 times... So you're looking at what, 16? So you might get another 6,000.
Well, yeah, they weren't doing it. They weren't going to do a an equity ship at that point. They were going to give the eventual winner a bigger chunk of it.
Yeah. So
to end it now, but still, but yeah, I know.
So then, yeah, so then they probably would have given him like 12. So another 2 grand to get rid of it, you know, and to play like an idiot. No way, I'm going to play for the title now.
All right. Well, the other thing I thought was interesting. Now, as his opponent. How does this change your game? You're sitting there, you're like, oh my God, this guy, he's making a huge mistake. I'm going to crush him. I was willing to give him a little extra money just to end this thing and let me be the champion. He won't do it. You get rattled now.
Yeah. I don't know. I realize all the pressure's on me now. as the better player. But I still think that as the better player and as the pro, this kind of stuff isn't going to affect you. If this is what you do for a living, and you're doing these pressure situations day in and day out, hour in, hour out, hand after hand, I really don't think some goober who wants to play it out is going to affect, you know what I mean, how I play. And I don't think that it's going to stop me from taking it down. I'm just going to, you know, ultimately get it all in when I have a bigger hand than him and then take it down. So, I don't think it tilts me. I don't think it puts me on any kind of steaming or anything. I think I'm just going to take it down. I'm a pro, and that's what I need to do.
Yeah, I would think the same thing. At the end of the day, the champion did prevail here. But I, watching him, you know, you can look in the player's eyes, and you could tell that he was a little rattled. Now, whether it affected his play or not is a totally different question. But and at that point, and I asked about this afterwards, you know, as you mentioned, all the pressure is on you now.
Yeah.
Because you are by far the best player here. If you don't win this thing, people are going to snicker, even though you're walking away with a gajillion dollars that they're not.
Right.
You know, because you're losing to an inferior player. So I do think it has to get in your head a little bit. But you're right. You know, if you play at that level, you need to learn how to hide those demons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that nothing's going to affect him. You know, his kid's got 3 circuit rings and a ton of Venetian catches and wins. You know, there's no way that just because he's supposed to win, he's not going to. And ultimately, that's exactly what he did. He pulled it through. So, but, you know, you make good points, though. I mean, it's amazing how much came out of this final table, you know, to make it a show. It's just remarkable.
Yeah, and then the final thing, too, is, finally, I'll mention the player's name, Maurice Hawkins. He's been in our magazine, and as we mentioned, he has 3 circuit rings. You mentioned, you know, lots of Venetian caches. The guy has game. Now he's the Florida Million champion. But he's also been one of the most polarizing players in this state. He was banned from one casino for cheating allegations, and so obviously that reputation follows him wherever he goes. You know, I talked to the poker manager there who said, you know, it's all hogwash. I don't think he cheated. People are just envious that this guy is really good, and he's put off by his brashness. This guy, you know, he likes to talk at the table. He likes to get into people's heads. So it's just easier for people to call him a cheat than to accept that he's just a really good player. Is there any truth to that, do you think?
Well, I mean, they know him better than we do. I've talked to him. I've played with him. When I played with him, he was funny. You know what I mean? He wasn't getting anybody's heads. He wasn't busting any stones at the time. Of course, you know, I lasted my usual 25 minutes in the tournament, so I didn't have a lot of time to play with him. But he was cool to me, and I wrote a little bio on him, and of course – we got a million letters about him saying he was a jerk and everything, and he never came off that way to me. He came off a little brash, confident, and and I think I even heard too that it wasn't even that he was cheating. He was just, you know, pushing the system as far as you could push it, and people got tired of it. People got tired of him winning all the time, so they just came up with, hey, let's just get him out of here and ban him. And I don't know, I don't think it was cheating. I think it was. I'm not saying what he did was right or wrong. I'm just saying I don't think that's what he was doing. And I think that, you know, if you have a reputable director of poker in one of the poker rooms in our state telling you that this guy is not a cheater and that I will let him play in my room whenever he wants and he's probably the best player in the state, then there's got to be some validity to that. And so I think it might be a he said, she said thing. And you know, you'll never get the full story unless you got them both in a room and locked the door and threw away the key. But I think that you know, he's just he knows the system, he knows how to play it, and sometimes he takes it a little too far for people's tastes.
Well, you know, I was really kind of really started to think about this when the manager said that, you know, hey, I think people are just upset with him winning, and you can see that. I think, you know, if this was like, you know, the Priest on $1 Million challenge, you know, and he wins, everybody's like, yay! But, you know, if it's somebody that kind of rubs you the wrong way, then it's just easier, I think, to say, hey, he's a cheater, blah, 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 than to acknowledge he's a good player or just celebrate the fact that he won.
Yeah.
And that makes it tougher, you know, when you're that kind of player that's, like I said, a little more polarizing than somebody that people generally want to root for. But I do think it's something that when we're in online tournaments too, we see this a lot. And, oh, you know, cheater or donk. or, you know, when it's just easier to say that than to say, you know what, maybe he just outplayed me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I was actually happy for him. You know, I mean, I know we've gotten a lot of guff over this, the treatment that we gave him and whatever, but I was happy for him. I thought to overcome all that, too, to overcome all these people daggers at you, and you know what I mean? I was happy for him. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess on a national scale, I'm thinking like, you know, maybe like a Phil.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people love to hate him and say he's not good or he's terrible in cash games. He gets brutalized. Oh, I heard he lost, you know, $3 million of Bill Ivy on the jet over the Monaco.
Yeah.
When really, come on. You know, does any of us want to see Phil Hellmuth at our table? No, I don't think so.
No.
You know, the guy is really good, at least at No Limit Hold'em. And it's just easier because he has this persona as being this crybaby antics kind of guy,
right,
to you know, knock him down a little bit. And I don't know. It's just kind of ridiculous to me, I think.
All right.
So I guess you know who I'm rooting for Dancing with the Stars.
If he's on that show, though, I'm going to watch every minute of it. We're going to have our update like we did with what's his name on Jean-Robert Ballon on Survivor. That's awesome.
All right, well, two more quick things came out, and they're going to be real quick because they're not really issues to talk about, but I thought they were interesting. You know, the Florida Million is being played at the Palm Beach Kennel Club, which has been recently awarded a World Series of Poker Circuit event.
Yep.
It's only the third non-Caesars property to be awarded one, and it will be February 17th to March 1st there. You know, we'll be down there playing a couple of things. This is the first time I actually talked to a manager about the whole World Series of Poker Circuit. You know, trying to get one in the behind the scenes kind of stuff. You know, I never really thought about it, to be honest. So just a couple interesting tidbits came out. All the stops have the same schedule. It's kind of like a cookie cutter, he says. You know, when you get awarded a circuit stop, they come in and say, here will be the events that you're running.
Right.
Here's when you're going to be running them. But they do give the rooms two wild card events that they can choose. And for this event, they picked Horse and Omaha 8. You know, but the rest of the schedule is No Limit Hold'em and non-ring ladies events. So, you know, if you're sitting out there and your favorite casino has a circuit event, you're like, geez, why is it all crappy No Limit Hold'em? Because, you know, I know a lot of people sit out there and ask that question. It's because that's the way it has to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I started looking at some of the other circuit events, too, and there seems to always be like an Omaha 8 and almost always a horse. Not almost always, but a horse or something else like that. So I do think the host locations probably look at it and go, you know what? I got to give something to my players that don't play No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use my two wildcard events on that. I would love to see the room that actually says, and maybe this happens, oh, yeah, let's just give two more No Limit events.
Oh, man, if they did that, that'd be hilarious.
I mean, what a waste. Come on. I mean, there's like, what is it, 17 events or something? I didn't count it, but quite a few.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And then the other interesting thing is rooms pay a pretty hefty fee to host a circuit event, and I'm not going to release that amount, but I was a little – my eyes rolled around in my heads at it. But then even after that, then they can opt to hire a Caesar staff to run all or part of the event, or they can do it themselves. So there's not this requirement from Caesars that they come in and run the whole thing so it's consistent. I mean, the schedule is consistent, but you know, the rooms could decide, you know what? Hey, I know how to run a tournament. I'm going to do it myself.
So,
or they could say, you know what, I'm going to pay Caesars more money to have them come in and take care of this for us.
Wow, so they'll literally like bring their dealers and everything too?
That's a good question. I don't know about the dealers. I know it's a tournament staff, but
wow.
But I suppose maybe, I guess I shouldn't say for sure. But,
it'd be kind of hard to imagine them awarding it to some room that doesn't want to use their own dealers. You know what I mean? That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Wow, that's pretty wild though that they can do that. It must cost a fortune.
Yeah, you know, it's very expensive. But, you know, it's, you know, the brand, I mean, we kind of laugh at Caesars as much as anybody else. But, I mean, they really leveraged his brand into, you know, wrangled every single dollar out of this brand they possibly can. And, you know, you got rooms like the Kennel Club that's just ecstatic. They went out and they said, you know, hey, this is a good investment for us. And obviously they're not going to make the money back at this event, but just the heightened putting them on the map, I guess.
Now, let me ask you this. Is this deal just for 1 year, or they have a multi-year deal? Do you know about that? I don't know. I didn't see that anywhere.
This one is just for 1 year.
Okay.
I think they'll assess how things go. And I guess in that sense, I mean, that's a reason to, you know, pay the extra money to have the staff come in and run it So it's a better shot of it being being a success, at least in the in Caesar's eyes, so you get it next year.
Right.
And then maybe do it yourself at that point. But you know, the schedule's crowded, as we've seen. I mean, if you look at them, they run them right up to the next one.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Literally could just travel the world playing circuit events and never have a day off.
Man.
Or never have much a day off. I think there's a little bit off this time of year. I don't think there's anything going on. But, you know, they're going to get started up again here in Choctaw pretty soon, and they're going to go straight to Tunica and then straight to Palm Beach. And then after that, I'm sure they're going straight somewhere else. So.
Man, it's crazy.
Massive. And then the final thing is, I did go down to the whole purpose of this trip. Oh, we got all this other cool stuff out of it. But the whole purpose was for me to go down and get on the Navigator of the Seas, the great ship that we're taking for our next cruise. And I was very, very, very excited to get on this ship and see how nice it is. You know, all the press is about the new Allure ship and the Oasis, and just got off those, and they are amazing. But these ships, Navigator at least, and then the Voyager, which is the same one that we're going to be using for our December cruise out of New Orleans, not quite at that level, but close enough that it makes for a good trip. I mean, for Pete's sake, Chris, they got an ice skating rink on this ship.
That's unbelievable.
An ice skating rink.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
But all kinds of stuff. I mean, if you're not if you're bringing the wife or the husband, then they don't play. Lots of stuff to do on the ship besides that. But for our purposes, we really want a good poker venue. And the space that we've been given is great. It's isolated on its own floor. The only other thing down there is the movie theater that's just pretty small. So we're pretty much just going to be the poker players on that floor in the huge conference center. Lots of space to play. We'll be able to wall off part of it to do our four free poker courses that are included in the price. And it's just going to be a good time. So I'm hoping we get a couple more podcast listeners on this next one, because I don't think they're going to be disappointed.
Very cool.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Repeat submitter this week, Chris.
That's okay. That happens a lot.
Yep. He's Mike from London, all the way from London, and apparently our swag did not make it to him. Must have caught up in customs, or you know, somebody just said, "Hey, I need a gift for Christmas. I'm just gonna five finger discount this thing and give it to my kid."
Oh man.
So we're giving him another shot here. He sent us in a hand and a half of the week, he calls it. The half hand was interesting, but we're going to stick with a full hand because
thank you.
That's what we do. They're all live hands. He plays this was in the main event of the London Calling Tournament at the new Fox Poker Club in London. Have you ever been there, Chris?
Only a couple of times, but the last time I was there, I said to them, "Hey, can you guys just get rid of this London Calling cliche? All right, I'm tired of hearing it, okay? It was The Clash. They had a song, okay? End of story. Come on, guys. You're brighter than this. You talk like you're smarter than we are. Come up with something a little more impressive than London Calling, okay? I'm tired of it."
You're so hard on people. You should be happy if it's the Fox Poker Club Invitational.
Yes, exactly.
We can see how you're not in marketing.
How about just all right. Poker Tournament? How about that? Poker Tournament 2010. Hey, there's a concept. Call it what it is.
Oh, man. All right, well, it's a no limit hold'em tournament. 20,000 starting units, 45-minute blinds. Our hero here had just been moved to a new 10-handed table, okay. Early part of the tournament, and he had been hit with a deck in the face, Chris. Not in the torso, not in the legs, directly in the face.
Better than a groin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You don't want to be hit there. He was flopping nut straights, sets, and nut flushes. So he's more than doubled his starting chip stack.
Now, this is before he got there or as soon as he got there?
I said in the early part of the tournament, so I'm assuming it's before he got there.
Okay.
All right, so we're on level 7 here. Blinds are 300 to 600, 50 ante.
Okay.
Yep, and he's just moved to this table 3 to 4 hands before this hand happened. So, all right, so when he got moved to the table, he was the big dog. All right, he has about 55,000 in chips and in the hijack seat. Under the gun, +1 calls and a folds around to him.
With seven of clubs, seven of hearts, and remember, he's in the hijack seat.
Okay, well, I think there's an argument for calling and raising. So I think I'm going to call and try to hit a set, but that's, you know, thinking inside the box. But I'll probably limp along here. Just, you know, I've been hitting everything, so what's to stop me from hitting a set too, right? So I'm definitely going to just call here and see what happens.
You know, it's warm and fuzzy inside the box, Chris, so don't knock yourself up.
Okay, all right. You know, the recent cold weather, I didn't know if I should venture out and try to build a snowman or if I should stay inside where the heat's on. And so, all right, I'm gonna just call for 600. 600, right? Yeah, I'm going to call for 600.
Yeah. And I'm staying inside here because it's raining in Phoenix.
Oh, my God.
It never rains in Phoenix.
That is pretty rare. Enjoy it while you can.
Brutalized. But no, it's early in the tournament. I don't really so much care that I have all these chips, and I don't really think that I need to swing it around quite yet. You know, if he's had a history of hitting sets, and I know the cards don't have memory or anything like that, but, you know, ride the rush here a little bit. You know, call, see if you get a couple other callers and hit that set and, you know, keep chipping up. That's what I would do.
Yeah,
but.
I'm going to try to hit a set here. There's no reason. You could raise, but you got people behind you to act. And the person limping under the gun or under the gun plus one, whatever, could easily have a big hand, hoping someone would raise and then re-raise. So let's just call, hope to hit a set. And if we don't hit a set, maybe we'll get a nice flop that's good for seven. So I'm just calling.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is we obviously have a lot of chips that we can play around with a lot of different flops.
Exactly.
And with a little more confidence than we could if we didn't have all these chips. So
exactly.
Don't necessarily need to hit our flop to win here, but that's our ultimate goal.
Okay.
All right, well, our hero likes our line of thinking, Chris. Limps for 600. Folds around to the small blind, who raises to 2,000 total. So a little bit more than 3x. Big blind gets out of the way. That under the gun plus one who called also folds. So we are the only one left in between the small blind and the pot. What do we do?
All right, well, I guess, again, there's an argument for folding and for calling. I'm not going to re-raise, obviously. I think that if I hit my set, I could get a lot of chips from this person. Plus, I have position on him. So, for 1,400 more, yeah, I'll call.
Yeah, and it kind of takes away a little bit of the what I just talked about being the big stack and being able to swing it around on a lot of flops. Because a small blind now is raising, which our fans know that I hate. I always, my antennas get up. But we have the chips to call here. I'm not going to lay down when
right,
I'm the
right.
chip leader to a small blind raising. And so, you know, still had some weapons going in this flop, regardless of whether we hit a seven or not. But probably fewer than we had before.
Okay. Well, I think we should call too. So let's call and see what happens. And how much does a small blind have in chips?
30,000 remaining after the race.
Okay, so we got about 53, they got about 30. So we definitely got them covered. And all right, so the pot's probably about almost 6,000 here.
Yeah, we decided to call, and the pot's at 5,700 now.
Okay. All right, I like the situation we're in right now. Just see if we flop a set and try to get an extra 30,000 here. So let's see what happens.
Okay, and he also mentions that the small blind was a conservative player that predominantly plays premium hands and would tend to overbet big pocket pairs.
Okay. So we're putting them on a big pair then, you think?
Yeah, so I guess it really narrows our flop possibilities here. So at this point, I'm kind of essentially calling the 1,400 to hope to hit my set, or if I think I can outplay this guy. But obviously, I think he has the better hand at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. All right, so I've got that in mind. I'm gonna put this guy on... I don't know. Not a pair, though. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the flop comes. It's really hard to kind of see how he acts after the flop.
Right. Well, our hero, who has obviously a little bit of history with this guy, three or four hands apparently, puts him on ace king, ace queen, ace jack suited, king queen suited, king jack suited, 9-9, 10-10, jack jack, and queen queen.
Well,
it would be a bigger bet with him with king king or ace ace.
If he's had history with this player in the past, because it is maybe a local tournament or something, then that's something to take into consideration. But really, if he's only had three or four hands, this guy, there's no way you can put him on those hands or this situation. There's just no way that he's had this many premium hands and to get that kind of a trend that you can understand what kind of player he is. So maybe you play with him earlier in the tournament or play with him locally or something. So I'll give him credit for knowing what this guy plays like. And
yeah, but I guess here's the other thing, though. I mean, again, we have to give him credit, like you said, for knowing the player. But without knowing that, a conservative player, I'm not going to put ace-jack, king-queen, or king-jack in his range here.
Yeah, no, not a re-raise.
Small blind raising.
Or a raise, yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think so either. I agree. It's going to have
to be. Big ace or a pair.
It's probably going to be a pair.
All right, well, the flop comes queen of clubs, queen of hearts, six of clubs, and the small blind checks to us.
Well, that's interesting. It's peculiar. It seems. I mean, really, I mean, what is this guy afraid of to check unless he has an absolute monster like pocket queens or ace queen? And even ace queen, you still want to continue because it would look fishy. You've raised two callers or two limpers from the small blind. I mean, so you have to have a hand that is worthy of betting here since they only limped and you got one of them to fold anyway. So you're heads up with this guy. You have to continuation bet here. If you don't, what could you have? So by not doing that, it's either a huge hand or he missed. So
right.
I would have to put some sort of feeler bet out there, right?
I would think so. I mean, we got the chips here. You know, if he's trying to be tricky and has a monster and wants us to take the lead and then raise us, then, you know, fine, whatever. Nice hand. I'll see you next time.
Yeah.
I can't imagine somebody check raising here. If they got a big monster, they'll just call and then maybe bet out on the turn because they know that we're probably not going to bet again. But, you know, fine. You know, I'll put out a bet now just to kind of figure out, you know, see if I can get some kind of read off of them,
yeah.
I would think, right?
Yeah. All right, so let's think about an amount here. There's like almost
5,700
in the pot. I would bet like $3,000, I guess, maybe 3,500, something like that. I mean, even if I'm raised here, I still have 50,000 chips. So there's no problem with a bet here. And like you said, if he's got a monster, he may just call. And if he doesn't have anything, he's going to fold. So we'll get our information. If he calls, then he might be a little careful on the turn. So I'm going to bet like 3,500, I guess.
Okay. I'd probably shoot about half the pot. So about $3,000 or so. And that's what our hero does. That's 3,000. Wants to see where he stands. And he's immediately called.
Immediately called. Insta-call.
Insta-call. Pot is 11,700. And at this point, our hero says he's rapidly losing interest in the hand. And worried that I'm well behind. At least to consider being worried here.
Sure.
Safe.
But let's think about the hands real quick. Ace queen, would ace queen call here? Yeah, I think ace queen might check and call. Would king queen check and call here? Yeah, would king queen be the one who raised from the small blind? Maybe, maybe not. Would overpair to sixes like nines or tens or jacks do that? Yeah, maybe. They might think it's a good flop for them, but they want to make sure you don't have ace queen. And when you bet 3,000 or whatever it was, they 3,500 or whatever, they think, hey, you know what? That's reasonable. My nines might be good here. So those hands now, it's starting to come into focus here. Pocket queens, the odds of it happening are just so rare, you probably put that out of your head anyway. So
yeah,
it could be ace queen. It could be nines. It could be tens, something like that, jacks. So, but I still think that if I had nines, I would have bet here or tens. Seems kind of weird to not bet that hand. But I think that we're definitely narrowing his range. He definitely has something. He's not just doing this with ace-king. And since there's no flush draw out there, it's not like, you know, he's trying to make a flush here. So I think he's got a pair or he's got a queen.
Excellent. All right. Well, the turn comes the ace of diamonds. So our board now is queen of clubs, queen of hearts, six of clubs, ace of diamonds. At this point, our hero says he's thinking he was dead and behind most of the hands I thought were in his opponent's range. The only hand that he thought he could beat of the above range was King Jack, and we've already dismissed that.
Yeah.
But the small blind checks again.
See, now that's kind of weird. I mean, now it feels like one of two things. Either he's filled up, or he's afraid of the ace. Like, he thinks that we have an ace now, and that we were betting our position and betting our big stack when we showed weakness on the flop. But now he's afraid of this ace, it seems like. So either he's got a boat, or he's afraid of the ace. So, God, I hate checking behind, but, I mean, if you really knew he was afraid of the ace, I'd have to make a bet here. So, if I'm putting him on being afraid of the ace, I'm betting here, and I'm betting pot. But if I don't think that, if I think that he might have a hand like mine, I'm going to check and try to hit my boat on the river and see if I can get a value out of it. But I don't know. Maybe he is afraid of that ace, and maybe we should bet here, Scott. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough call, because if that's exactly what's happening here, a check here kind of ruins our line on the river to represent that ace.
Yeah.
But if he's got a better hand, then we're just throwing chips away here. I err on the side of caution, and I'm not saying this is the way Lee Childs will play it, but one of the great lessons that he's given us is, you know, you check here, you keep the pot a little bit smaller, and you can call. If he bets out on the river, then you can call that bet, and it's probably the same amount that you would bet here.
Yeah.
And we really don't know where we are in this hand, so I think at this point I'd be willing to check. You know, if he checks the river, then I could put a value bet in there thinking my sevens are good, or at least I can get him off the hand. If he bets out on the river, it's probably going to be a small enough bet that I'm comfortable calling. So I'm going to check here.
Okay. Well, the other thing, too, is that we've only had 3 or 4 hands at this table. Now, I reckon that he probably
– You reckon?
I reckon that he probably knows how this guy plays, so that in turn means this guy knows how he plays. So maybe we have an aggressive – persona. I don't know. So maybe he does have a big hand. He's checking to us knowing we're going to keep betting. I don't know if that's how he plays. But really, if you think about the types of hands that he would have raised with from the small blind and then done this line of betting with, it's just zeroing in on a pair that's over sixes but under queens. And mm-hmm. I don't think he has a queen anymore. Because how can he keep checking, especially now, you know, I mean – there are 2 clubs on the board. You know, there was the queen of clubs and he could have ace, king of clubs, you know. But really, other than that, I don't know. I'm thinking that if we had aces or kings, we were betting. If we had a queen in our hand, we were betting. And since there were 2 clubs on the flop, we probably were defending that hand. So it's got to be something like nines, tens, or jacks. And we're probably still behind. So maybe we should represent this ace and bet like 3/4 of the pot or pot.
Oh, that's a good point. You might have talked me into this.
Yeah. I mean, really, what are we in this tournament for except not to play poker?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you're right. If we bet here and we get raised now, which is what we should get, what should happen if we're crushed here.
Right.
And then we could throw it away. And we have the added value of, taking the pot down if you're scared of the ace or scared of the queens, even, for that matter. All right. Well, you talked me into it.
All right. Let's bet. Let's see if he bets.
All right, well, our hero decides to check behind, like I was. He didn't have the advantage of having Chris Cosenza on his shoulder talking his hand through to him.
Well, we also have the advantage of 2020, hindsight. So, I don't disagree with the check. I'm just saying that if we really think about it, it seems like this guy does not have a queen and he does not have an ace. Because if he had either one of those, he would have bet. Continuation bet. It seems like he's afraid of this flop, or now afraid of the turn. So I would bet just because what we've gotten from him, not from if I'm at the table. Who knows? I probably check too because I'm just not thinking it out this well. So not that I'm right. I could be wrong. You know what I mean? But I don't have a problem checking behind either, I guess.
All right. Well, he does check behind, and the river is the 7 of diamonds.
Oh, my God.
So our final board is queen of clubs, queen of hearts, 6 of clubs, ace of diamonds, 7 of diamonds. We boat up, and the small blind checks to us once again, Chris.
Yeah, there's no way this guy's got a huge hand. Because when we didn't bet the turn, now he has to bet the river, because otherwise he's missing a bet if he has a monster.
Yeah.
So there's no way this guy has an ace or queens, and we probably should have bet the turn. And since we didn't, now we know we've got the best hand. We have to value bet here. So the pot's like almost 12,000, I think. So I would bet like half the pot.
You know, to be honest, I think the small blind's missing a bet regardless of what his hand is at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we got the scary queens out there. The ace came. We checked again. No one is showing anything. So, I mean, why not put a bet in here now?
Yeah.
I mean, we obviously had a hand good enough to raise from the small blind preflop, so we got a hand that has showdown value with this board based on how the hand's played out. I'm taking a shot here hoping my opponent folds, and I don't have to see a showdown.
I have to admit, if I had eights or nines, I would bet the river here. if I were the small blind. I would bet. So or 10. So I would bet, or jacks. So yeah, you're right. I think he's missing a bet here regardless. But the the check is just hugely screaming that you're ahead now with that full boat.
Yeah, and then I guess the other thing to think of is, you know, this way, if this guy isn't going to be betting on the river here, you're probably not going to get anything out of him. So if I'm betting here, I'm probably betting really small.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think half the pot isn't that hard to fathom a call from this guy. I think he could call half a pot if he has something like jacks.
Okay. All right, well, that's what our hero does. He bets about 6,000, which is just a little less than half the pot.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And he thinks that he's behind only to ace-ace, queen-queen, or ace-queen out of the possible range. And if his opponent shoves, he would probably call. What do you think about that?
Oh, it's hard to fold a boat. You know, I mean, at that point, let's see. If you bet 6, it's 17 in the pot, and then he'd be shoving another, I guess at that point would be, I don't know, 20-something, so it'd be 30. I don't think I could fold.
We'd be down to 20. We'd be down to about our original stack, probably.
Yeah, I don't think I could fold with a full house like that, because this guy played it like there's no way. At some point, whether he's got a huge hand or not, at some point he has to bet, and he didn't bet at all. So there's no way this guy's got a hand that beats us at the river. There's just no way. So if he shoved, he might have three queens and, you know, was being an idiot the whole way, but I don't see that happening. I see us ahead.
Yeah, I think if he, if he actually has a hand at the end here that's got us crushed, I mean, wow, that's really like 27 level thinking here. Knowing that we're gonna bet on the end and then the shove and we're gonna call a shove. It just doesn't add up at all. So
no, you're absolutely right.
All right, well, we bet our 6,000, and the small blind thinks about it for a few minutes and just calls. So we don't have to worry about it.
Yay.
Our hero shows the 7 of clubs, 7 of hearts, the gasp and groans of the table, and our opponent turns over 10 of spades, 10 of diamonds.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, I don't agree with the check on the flop, though. That's the thing. You got to protect your hand, and it's a real good flop for 10s. I don't understand why he did that, but when he called us, it seemed like he had that kind of a hand when we bet out. And then when the ace came, he checked again. Now he's definitely afraid, and it makes sense, right? It makes sense now that you think about it.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that ace, too. I mean, yeah, you'd be afraid if you have tens, but I would still think that the other guy would be more afraid of the ace than you would. I mean, again, we raise from the small blind pre-flop.
Right.
We get a paired board with queens, which is a legitimate card for us to have. We check. Maybe we're getting crafty there. An ace comes. I'm still betting there with my tens.
No, I agree. I'm not saying how this guy played it. I'm saying that that's why he did that. I think he was afraid. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He should have represented. He should have bet the flop and then represented on the turn. And then if he got called again, then, you know, then he readjusts. But no, absolutely. I think that he played it terribly the whole way, whoever this person, except for the although I think pre-flop, I probably would have raised even more than he did too. So I don't think he played it right the whole way.
Yeah, it was just like a 3X at that point, right? I mean, he should have, you know, he already had two callers in, too. I mean, so at the minimum, I'm raising 5X if I'm trying to protect my hand there. I mean, I'd probably just call there and try to flop a set like we were.
Yeah, you know, as they say on TV, he checked when he was ahead and he called when he was behind. You know what I mean, at the end. So, I mean, he played it just terribly the whole way. He raised pre-flop, should have continued with the strength, would have gotten our 7s to fold, would have taken down a handsome pot. Now he's lost a bunch and is probably out of the tournament in the next few rounds. So, yeah, I think he played it terrible from both sides.
All right, well, we appreciate you keeping your faith, Mike, and giving you another shot to get you some swag. I guarantee you this swag will get to you because it's going to be emailed to you. We're going to send you a great download of that Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single mixed games that comes from the good folks at element26.net.
Awesome. Well, Scott, I want to thank you for being a traveling fool and providing us with another show topic to continue the streak. I don't know how we're doing it, but we keep coming up with shows every week. And next week, be sure to tune in because I am channeling John Moss.
Excellent.
All right, have a safe trip back, buddy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.